On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we're focusing on a shooting that broke out in a Minnesota apartment building, leaving two dead and others injured, including police officers. A disgruntled resident of that building has been identified as the shooter in the Minnesota case. We'll hear Odyssey Station WCCO News and Talk react to news about the case breaking in real time. As Minnesota's State Fair was bringing food, fun, and music to the state this week, a disturbing shooting broke out in its largest city on Wednesday, September 2nd. Here's WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities reporting on the incident the following day, Thursday, September 3rd.
Two civilians are dead and several Minneapolis police officers are hurt after a shooting yesterday afternoon at a Loring Park apartment building. The city says just after 4:30 p.m., police responded to 911 calls about gunshots at Shoreline Plaza Apartments, that's formerly known as Loring Towers, on East Grant Street near Nicollet Avenue. They found multiple people who'd been shot in the lobby and heard more gunfire. Raina Raker says she lives in the building where it happened and was coming out of her apartment when the shooting unfolded.
I literally was walking down the stairs as the situation was going on. I heard swearing, I heard cursing, and then I just heard shot.
Following the sound to an upper floor, police were met with a haze, which a department spokesman said significantly limited their visibility. That haze caused four officers adverse effects, but the city didn't share further details. Both police and the suspect fired shots. Three officers were hurt in the shooting. One was undergoing surgery last night, but Governor Tim Walz says all are expected to recover. Mayor Jacob Frey saying the three officers hurt in the shooting likely saved many lives.
Two officers were hit by gunfire, one in the leg, the other with two bullets to the abdomen. But for their heroic work, the death toll would have been far higher.
In all, HCMC says it took in seven patients. One died, six are still being treated, their conditions are unknown. Another person died at the scene. The shooter is also dead. Police are unsure how he died and aren't naming him right now. Two more officers were hurt when their squad car got into a crash while responding to the scene. At least 10 other law enforcement agencies assisted Minneapolis police. The BCA is investigating. Chris Miller, who lives in the building, isn't sure what comes next.
Don't know if I have a place to live yet. Don't know if I can get back home yet. Don't know what's going to happen.
And here's further reporting from CCO on Thursday.
The area around the complex is still very much closed off as the investigation into yesterday's shooting continues, with police confirming six people were injured, including three police officers, and that three people, including the shooter, are dead. This has left people still living here at the complex on edge, with some still waiting to get back inside.
I don't talk to nobody, say nothing to nobody in here, but I don't feel like it's safe.
I heard one person got in through talking to BCA. I just asked, and I guess I'm not able to go, probably around 10.
We do know the suspect was in the process of being evicted from Shoreline Plaza. There's still no word on what exactly led up to the shooting or who the victims are. In downtown Minneapolis, I'm Taylor Rivera, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Police responded just after 4:30 p.m. to 911 calls about gunshots at an apartment building on East Grant Street near Nicollet Avenue. Both police and the suspect fired shots at one another on an upper floor. HCMC says it took in seven patients. One died and six are still being treated. Their conditions are unknown. Another person died at the scene. The shooter is also dead and police haven't said how he died and they haven't released his identity. Three officers were hurt in the shooting. One was in surgery last night. Governor Tim Walz says all are expected to recover. Two more officers got hurt in a car crash responding to the scene. The Minnesota BCA is investigating. Mark Fry, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
WCCO provided another update with details from the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, or BCA.
I'm Laura Oakes. Minnesota BCA Superintendent Drew Evans sharing some new details of yesterday's mass shooting in downtown Minneapolis. Evans says the suspected shooter, 35-year-old Carlton Neal Johnson, first fired his gun on the first floor of the apartment at 15 East Grant Street.
The first shooting occurred outside of the building during a custody exchange of a child believed to belong to the suspect in this case with a woman that he had a prior relationship with.
He says Johnson then shot someone who works in the building at close range and shot another worker, then went to the ninth floor.
That is where they encountered the suspect, and there was an exchange of gunfire at that time. The suspect died and two officers were shot and injured. A third officer was injured, unrelated to the exchange of gunfire.
Evan says the mother of the child involved in the custody exchange was shot in the leg, and the child was unharmed and removed safely. Again, Evan says the shooter died in the exchange of gunfire with police, all of it captured on surveillance video. Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty, meanwhile, sharing additional information related to the shooting and the shooter's behavior leading to it.
In a statement, she said on June 25th, police responded to a call about Carlton Johnson displaying a firearm to another person. She said police later learned that Johnson had a legal permit to carry and that he displayed the weapon, but it did not leave his waistband. She said police submitted the case, but it was determined it could not be charged because of insufficient evidence. She went on to say her office did flag the conduct for an extreme risk protection order screening, but found, again, there was not enough evidence to move forward. Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Meanwhile, residents of the building were finally allowed back in just a few hours ago as investigators worked through the night and combed the building for evidence. Fatigue and frustration setting in for many, like Anthony White.
Minneapolis has to change. We got too much national news and all that.
Then more information was released about the alleged shooter.
I'm Mark Fry. We're learning more about the suspect in yesterday's deadly mass shooting in downtown Minneapolis. He's being widely identified as 35-year-old Carlton Johnson II. This individual says he knew Johnson and that he was facing an eviction from the Shoreline Plaza due to numerous reported incidents in the past year, including incidents where Johnson brandished a firearm at apartment staff and residents.
He was mad, but he had to think about it because you can't show your gun. He had a gun license, and he just kept showing his gun, like, to people. And then he put his gun on one of the managers there. So he had to go. It was leading up to it, and then he started saying he was going to kill people. Put it on Facebook, but I thought he was playing. He always played like that.
Three people, including the suspect, died. Of the six who were injured, three were police officers, two of which were shot. Interim Minneapolis Police Chief Bill Peterson.
I'm truly sickened by this level of violence. That feeling is tempered only by the courageous actions of the Minneapolis police officers who responded without hesitation.
WCCO News Talk's Jason DeRusha discussed the shooting from the state fair.
We were in our regular fair coverage yesterday when once again we're faced with a challenge and a problem as a society. Are landlords going to be afraid to evict someone now after the mass shooting in downtown Minneapolis? And the new information we learned over the last hour from the BCA is that the beginning incident that started this mass shooting was the shooter shooting the woman who was dropping off his child. And these are stories that we have told far too many times. Custody dispute, domestic violence. Usually it's a man who is the problem. And in this case, a handgun. In this case, so many warning signs. I think part of the question that we're going to be trying to get to the bottom of over the next days and weeks after, you know, two people killed by this guy before he was killed, two police officers shot. That's the update we're waiting for in the next couple of minutes for the mayor of Minneapolis and the interim police chief. But this guy was threatening people with a gun in his building. It's part of why he was being evicted, according to court record. Now, you have the right, for sure, to defend yourself, and this guy was defending himself through the legal process. But don't we as a society have an overriding urge to take the guns away from this guy? He had all of the ingredients. Custody dispute, ongoing threats. You know, not just like hearsay threats, like evidence of threats. And then a relatively recent permit to carry that was issued this year, according to the reporting I saw today for the Star Tribune. Just so many things where you say, like, we have all these debates about what we should do to change our gun laws. What about red flag laws? What about this? What about that? In this case, we're talking about a handgun. So no gun related law would have addressed this situation. But you did have people who were saying, like, hey, this guy, he's a problem. And he still got a permit to carry? Like, what was the background check? What was the research? It's so frustrating because we could have, you know, yes, the two people who were killed by this guy in the apartments right near the convention center, right near Loring Park, they were residents. They were residents on the ninth floor, the same floor of his apartment. I don't know. It's an incident like this that, once again, like, are we going to do this once a year, right? Like, once a year, we're going to have a mass shooting that's going to bring up this whole debate, and everyone's going to go in their corners and make their same old usual arguments. And in this case, was it more of a matter of the system doesn't move quickly enough?
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Are we too hesitant to take away the guns? Yes. I don't think, and I'm not proposing that we take away everybody's guns, but here you have when you look at the ingredients of what we knew about this guy, it just, to me, it makes no sense.
Gun control now. Blame the Republicans. They're right next to you.
The guy in our crowd.
Republicans, though.
Yeah.
It's a bigger problem than just that.
Well, I mean, definitely in Minnesota, we had Democrat, DFL trifecta control, and they couldn't pass any changes to gun laws either. And I get it. Like, we've made it a situation where the NRA has sort of won this debate by saying, if you give an inch, they'll take a mile. And that's become just sort of accepted belief. And there's some truth to it. Like, I understand why that is the dogma, but I do think, like, we're a country of 50 states, and some states should be doing some experimentation in this area. We are standing by. We're expecting a news conference any minute now. We're expecting a news conference any minute now from the Minneapolis police. And so
we're hoping they're going to update the conditions of the officers that were injured yesterday. Yeah.
The actual headlines that we learned today, the actual new information, is we did learn the names of the two who were killed. And think about this. Like, they were two 60-plus-year-old men, a 63-year-old and a 61-year-old. They both lived on the same floor of this 35-year-old Carlton Neal Johnson II. These two officers are still in the hospital. Their condition is described as stable, but we don't know too much about their injuries. But we know that, you know, this stuff, this is the second eviction-related homicide in our community over the last couple months. We had another situation where in St. Paul, where a guy was being evicted. He was mad that he couldn't break his parking contract.
Yeah.
And they wanted him to pay, I don't know, it was like 50 or 60 bucks. It was a tiny amount of money. And instead, he went into the leasing office and just executed the three people in the office.
We had a mutual friend of ours that was out here yesterday as this was going on that owns or manages some apartment buildings and talked about his concern in hearing that this was somebody that was being evicted that had turned around and started shooting people. Yeah. And so I would think anybody that is in that business or in that area and, you know, hears these stories is starting to wonder about how strict do they want to be about
right?
the rules. Because if this is going to be how it is, that people get evicted and lose it and start shooting people,
right.
I don't want to be in those shoes.
And in this case, we only know from court records that this eviction process was part of his story. But an ongoing custody dispute seems to be maybe the main driver here, because we know from other court records. I mean, man, aren't you sick of this, though? Like, oh, of course. Like, of course. This guy had a court record a mile long, record of threats, custody dispute. And somehow this year he was still able to get a permit to carry. And do we need more? Is this something that we could agree on where you say, like, all right, could we say if you have a, you know, restraining order or a custody dispute, you can't get a permit to carry? Now, would he have gotten a gun anyway? I don't know, right? Like, we can what if, or this wouldn't solve that, or what if he did that? We could do it over and over and over. But this case to me seemed very potentially preventable. Texters coming in, and you're welcome to join the conversation, 651-461-9226. As we wait for Minneapolis officials to provide an update on the condition of these officers. Because what heroism there yesterday as well. You know, knowing there's an active shooter situation, and again, these Minneapolis police officers go running in. They go running in. How much violence and national news does this state need before we understand the city council members have blood on their hands? I do think that, like, we always want to find someone to blame in this situation. And blaming the city council, what could the city council, like, I'm no fan of the DSA wing of the Minneapolis City Council, but what could the city council have done that would have made a difference here? We had a court proceeding going on with this guy. We had an eviction proceeding going on. There's all of this stuff going on. So I'm just not sure. I'm not sure that there's an obvious political, like, oh, we got to blame this. We need to put people in prison for making threats with a gun, brandishing, etc. We have red flags now. No one used them here, I guess. Yet he made many threats. Yeah, that was my initial question. Because this seems to me like 100% example where the red flag law should have been triggered. Should have been triggered.
So
and
then
why
the question,
wasn't it?
So, well, then the question becomes, is the public educated enough in knowing when that's applicable and how to go about getting it applied? Because I'm not, you know, I'm just being honest. I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
I mean, you know, we could look it up and probably figure it out relatively quickly, but not everybody has that advantage to them.
All right, we are live at the State Fair. Got lots of fun show planned for you today, but we're starting with a serious topic for sure as we're standing by for City of Minneapolis officials to give us an update on those two police officers who were shot. We know that three officers were injured yesterday. One was caught up in some sort of smoke or haze. This in a shooting where we know a guy killed two people and then unleashed on others, including two police officers. So that's what we know. Over the last hour or so, we learned that the people who were killed in the building were neighbors of his on the ninth floor. The State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension said, we don't know for sure if the people who were shot were targeting. So the way this all went down, if you're just joining and just sort of plugging back into what's going on, is the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension says that this guy went to do like a child, like a four, he has a four-year-old child. There was like a custody exchange outside the building, and he shoots the woman. At this point, I don't think the BCA clarified if the woman was just supervising the child or if it was the mother of the child or what the relationship was. But she was shot. The child ran, and the child is okay. Then he goes in the building, shoots two people who work for the building, goes up to the ninth floor, shoots and kills two neighbors, and then police get up there, climb up the stairs. Think of the courage of these police officers, right? You know you have an active shooting situation going down. These officers climb up the stairs to the ninth floor because you don't want to... I mean, you imagine like that moment when the elevator door opens and this guy is maybe standing there. So they come up the stairs, and they are both shot. There were multiple officers who came up, at least three, but then the gunfire exchange. And we don't know, did... at this point, I don't think it was clear as to who killed the guy, the shooter in this case. Did the officers shoot and kill him? Did he shoot himself? All we know is he died in the exchange of gunfire with Minneapolis police officers. They have surveillance video of everything because there was surveillance cameras on every floor of this building. So that's the latest as far as what is happening. But Mayor of Minneapolis and the interim police chief were supposed to start a news conference around 3 o'clock. And at this point, hasn't started yet. Oh, we're I'm being told that police... Well, we know that police shot him. So that's the update from our newsroom saying that the medical examiner confirmed.
Because there were multiple speculative reports last night that he had killed himself. So that's an interesting detail to get confirmed by police.
Yeah, but because they shot him, is that the bullet that killed him, I guess would be the question. But our newsroom is saying it was confirmed by the medical examiner that police shot him. So that's sort of where we're at. What the official BCA statement was over the last hour is that he died in an exchange of gunfire. So the BCA wasn't that specific about how that all went down. Ultimately, like, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter to me how that went down. Obviously, when you do an investigation, that's part of what you do is trying to figure out exactly what happened. But at this point, we just don't have anything from the city of Minneapolis yet. So we're standing by for that. Lots of texts coming in at 651-461-9226. And I do think this is maybe, this is the part of the story that we often don't talk about enough. And that is the risk involved with out-of-control men in sort of these domestic violence relationships with women. Because that's what precipitated this. And the texts are saying, how many stories do we see of women who file restraining orders or alert police to threats to their lives to only end up dead? We need an interception point for people who are clear threats. Does anyone really think, like, we do enough to protect women who are in a bad place with a guy? I certainly don't. And to think that in this case, we had a custody situation where the latest reporting that I saw is that his child was taken away from him and was in the custody of the county for a while. So I don't know. I think that's a fair question to say. When we have these gun conversations, we tend to focus on the type of weapon that we're going to allow or the number of rounds that we're going to allow. But the reality is, on a deeper level, we're leaving, especially women, in very dangerous situations and without a clear way for them to be taken care of. Lots of texts coming in.
And it's obviously all the more complicated when there's a child involved, right? Because you hear all the time in situations where there's domestic threats, well, why don't they just leave?
Yeah.
Well, if there's a child involved, it's not always that simple.
It's not always that simple.
And so is there a way that we as a society, as a culture, can do better, need to do better in providing them safe spaces where, the needs of the child are also looked after, but, there's safety provided to a woman in a situation that's clearly dangerous.
I mean, I just think about the timeline here, that he was served with an eviction notice on June 16th. On June 25th, he was accused of threatening a resident with his firearm. On August 3rd, his attorney said, no, he never, you know, he didn't do it. And so we've just been waiting for that case to work its way through. In the meantime, this guy's got a gun, got a handgun, legally had that handgun. You think, like, I don't know, man. Like, it to me, we have to do better than that. We have to do better. Texter, does the system take care of men when it comes to custody battle and financial divorce settlement? And you wonder why they get pissed off and get violent. I mean, that's an absolutely ridiculous comment. Is the custody situation in this country fair? Well, if it's not fair, like letting that escalate and fester, getting a gun and shooting someone, no, that's not the logical end of that scenario. It just isn't. It just isn't. My sister is a domestic violence subject expert, says a texter. She works for the United Nations fighting domestic violence. She says women are at most risk when the restraining order is filed or when they leave the house. I think that's 100% true. And so I would like to hear that as part of the discussion over what we do with gun laws in this country. Because it's not as simple as saying we should restrict this gun or we should provide this mental health support. How many homicides, how many shootings could we prevent if we could do something better about domestic violence? And don't both sides this like, oh, guys get screwed too. Men are the ones who are taking the guns and shooting because they're pissed off about a situation. It is very rare that a woman is the one who does that. So let's deal with the lethal risk first. And yeah, then if we want to have a debate about, like, is the divorce system or the child custody system fair, we can have that debate. But I'm not that concerned about it. I'm concerned about people being killed, and I'm concerned about our law enforcement officers having to rush in, which, again, you look at this scenario and say, these cops, what they did yesterday, I mean, it is, we've seen scenarios where officers sit there and you think of Uvalde, where officers were like waiting and waiting for the right moment and waiting for backup. In this case, these cops didn't wait. They ran up the stairs because somebody was shooting. And two of them are in the hospital right now. I mean, it's important to remember that as well. We'll get an update on their condition, or maybe we won't. That's sort of what happens when you stand by for a news conference for the city.
Are we doing enough to make sure incidents like the one that happened at Shoreline Plaza don't happen again? After the recent tragedy, people are asking questions.
Meanwhile, a lot of people questioning why there was no extreme risk protection order against Johnson, which could have temporarily barred him from having a gun in the first place.
Johnson obtained a permit to carry a firearm from Hennepin County in June of this year. Despite his known criminal history, documented reports of threatening behavior toward neighbors, and other instances of erratic behavior. Executive Director of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, Jeff Potts, says identifying people who may be at risk of violent behavior is very challenging.
That requires law enforcement to have relationships in the community. It requires a community to step up and help law enforcement or social services identify people who they think may be potentially in a position where their mental condition is such that they could do something like this.
Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty has expressed support for the state's red flag laws, saying they're a powerful tool if people know what they are and how to access them. Laura Oakes, News Talk 830 WCCO.
To end our show, we have coverage of the shooting from the Adam and Jordana show, also out of WCCO News and Talk.
Another awful, awful event happening in Minneapolis where we had this mass shooting in an apartment complex. Three people dead, including the shooter. Three officers injured, two who were shot. Thankfully, the good news in all that is those officers are going to be okay. But I had no idea. I was at volleyball last night, Jor, when I saw your text and I immediately something about Minneapolis, and I immediately logged on to the news and was just heartbroken to see another just awful, awful story.
For me, I was actually at home, and I live downtown now. So my daughter and I, all of a sudden, the sirens exploded because we live not far from HCMC. And HCMC is where all of the high-level trauma victims and all of the gunshot victims were taken. And we heard the sound of the siren. She goes, Mom, what's going on? I said, okay, let's find out. And we did some digging, and her dad works at HCMC, so he was keeping us updated. And then I turned on WCCO radio, and I was listening to Steve Simpson and Susie Jones. Great coverage, by the way. And here's what I thought. I thought, not again. Because 2 years ago, just a week ago, 2 years and a week, Adam and I were out here when the Annunciation shooting happened. We obviously blew up our show. It happened like at 8:45 in the morning. By 9 a.m. we went on, and we were covering once again a mass shooting in Minneapolis. And yesterday I turned on the news, or I turned on CCO radio when I was at home, and I'm listening to Jason at the state fair. You could hear the fair noises behind him. Yeah. And Jason DeRussia is sitting up here just like we were, and I was thinking how hard that is for Jason. It's hard to be at the fair and cover breaking news, especially something awful as tragic like
right.
as a mass shooting and possibly officers down, which is absolutely devastating. And I thought, here we are again.
Yeah.
I cannot believe this is happening was my first thought, but then, of course, this is happening because nothing changed after Annunciation. And we still have a gun problem in this country. We still have a mental illness problem in this country. We still have red flag laws that aren't used enough. We still have people that don't intervene or get help for themselves. And everybody is vulnerable.
Yeah, my takeaway, and again, each, sadly, it happens so often, and each situation, of course, is different, and there's still obviously a lot to know about what happened yesterday and what led to it, but all the reporting I've read was that this individual who committed this shooting, there were red flags about this guy.
Yes.
He was a menace at this apartment building he was living at. He was harassing neighbors. He showed his gun often. And my question at the top of my head is, how in the hell does a guy like this, who clearly is a violent person, who clearly is not right, how is he continue? And he was evicted from there in June.
Yes.
And I don't know what kind of process that was underway to get him out. But my question is, at what point does somebody commit crimes like that or harass neighbors like that? Is that person actually arrested and taken into custody?
And he wasn't. He was roaming the streets with a permit to carry.
Apparently,
so that is a huge problem. And I was also listening because, it's funny. I live downtown now, and I looked at apartments in that area. It's not, it's a mixed area, but there are some lovely condos and lovely apartments there. I live, less than a mile away right now, which is what we decided on. But I was listening to some of the residents of the building. And a reporter asked one of the residents, they were downstairs being evacuated, do you feel safe going back in the building and going to sleep tonight? He said, I never feel safe in this building. He said, we have been asking for better security in this building, but, there is some low-income housing there, and, housing is hard to come by in Minneapolis. And he said, we knew this was just a powder keg, like something was going to happen, and he never felt safe. And my heart just went out to him thinking, it must be so challenging to go to bed or to walk into where you live, your home every day, and not feel safe. And I just feel so bad for the people of that neighborhood and certainly of that building.
And I believe that person, but I also was reading another article about the story, and they had talked to a nearby restaurant owner who said that building had recently gone under new ownership, and that the new owners of that building actually had been doing a better job of cleaning things up, and I think that person used getting the riffraff out. Again, it's just another case where we're going to have to look into the texter here. Adam, the shooter wasn't violent. Scary, but not violent. Well, if you're threatening somebody and
and flashing
show
his gun,
you have a gun
and saying he's going to kill somebody in his life,
I characterize that as violence.
Yes,
but point taken in that, at what point can a person be taken into custody?
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're going to have to get to those answers. We're going to have to ask those questions, get those answers from authorities as to why a person like this
who clearly exhibited tendencies that, in my opinion, were violent. How a person like that was, I guess, not at some point intervened with, either by authorities or somebody else. Again, these are all questions that are going to have to come up and be answered. But certainly the best news out of it are these officers who were injured and the other people who were injured who are hopefully going to make a full recovery. Our hearts go out to the two people who were murdered yesterday in that apartment shooting. And we'll have a lot more questions, hopefully, that will get answered. All right.
Adam Carter and Jordana Green also had veteran journalist Eric Escola on their show this week, and they discussed the Shoreline Plaza shooting.
Last night, when everything went down with the shooting, I was in my apartment downtown, and I said to my daughter, who's grown now, I said, I feel like I should go down there. And she looks at me, she goes, are you insane? And I was like, well, I mean, it's breaking news. And she's like, Mom, but we had quality reporters on site. We had Steve Simon, but it's that instinct. Like, you want to be where the news is. And I talked myself off that ledge, but I don't think that instinct ever goes away. It certainly doesn't with you.
I'm three blocks from that intersection where I live in Loring Park.
Oh, you do?
And I just crossed that intersection Tuesday. It's close, yeah.
Were you home at the time of the shooting?
I was.
So you experienced all of this last night?
Oh, yeah. I heard the police helicopter. I don't know if it was a police helicopter.
A chopper.
Or if it was Channel 5 or 11.
Yeah.
Or 4, whatever.
It's tough.
But, and one of the, and I didn't get the guy's name, but one of the CARE 11 reporters made a very good statement that I think probably should be repeated. At the time of these incidents, half of what you hear reported is probably inaccurate.
Mm.
Yep.
And it isn't because they're trying to be inaccurate. It's that they're filling time, audience is changing over, people are just coming on board. You want to keep the live coverage going, but you may be having a tap dance for a while.
Sure.
And we all know what
that leads to.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KNX News in Los Angeles, The Annie Fry Show out of KFTK in St. Louis, The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis, A New Morning out of WBEN in Buffalo, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, and WCCO News and Talk in the Twin Cities, including Jason DeRusha and The Adam and Jordana Show. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.